Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, I'm Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Georgie Jorgensen. And our guest today is Bill McQuiggan, and our topic is Angel Investing 101. Bill, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning.
Hey, glad to be here.
Bill, can you give us a little information on your background and how many years you've been involved in angel investing?
I would go back well over 20 years and have looked at countless deals, so it'd be hundreds if you need number, invested in dozens, and actually invested earlier on a little faster, and as I've gone, invested in fewer deals.
So if you've been doing this for 20 years and you've looked at dozens of deals, you must look at a new deal every week, a couple times a week?
Easy two a week is not uncommon on average.
So you split some of your time between looking at new deals and managing the deals that you've invested in.
Exactly, and that is a hard balance because it's always, when you write a lot of checks, you get a lot of calls, you get a lot of people that want to run an idea by you. And again, I'm always looking for somebody that I might pick up as a client or a partner, so I do want to look at them.
So when you're looking for a deal, a good deal to invest in, what is it that you look for in a deal?
I look at five things that are come off the top of my head. And one is it intuitive, which means is it really easy to understand? Two, is the market big enough? I'm not interested in a small niche. Most investors aren't in a small niche-y thing. Three, the owner management team, how solid they are. Four, can that management team owner execute their business plan? And we'll have to talk about business plan because that's a big topic or an important piece. And five, is there capital in or could there be capital raised? Money be attracted to this deal.
Okay, let's go back to the first issue there. You said, is it intuitive? Are you talking about, is this something that's easy to understand, that's easy to get your hands around?
Yes. If I can't understand it in one sentence, I don't really like it, and I find out if you have to spend a paragraph explaining something to an investor, it's not going to fly. You're not going to get anybody interested. And the reason I bring that up is I'm always have to go with other investors. An investor can't go alone because you just never have enough money.
Most small businesses are short of two things, time and capital.
Yes.
There's always places to spend money and there's never enough, so you have to balance those things. When you're at that initial step, how important is it to value the character of the person with the idea, the person that's doing the startup?
Excellent point. That is probably the number one thing is I'm looking for the sellability of that CEO founder. Are they passionate? Do they have the energy? Do they have the experience? Are they all in, so to speak? That CEO, that founder is a critical piece because people are investing in people, not the idea, usually.
So initially, you have to have a good idea, a good, easily understandable product. You have to have a good client partner that's passionate and deliberate. And next, you're looking at the size of the market. Was that your next issue?
Yes. Again, if it's going to be $50 million, if everything worked out perfect, because that's how big the market is, since you're never going to get 100% of the market, usually it's not big enough because I feel the investors and myself need a 10X over a period of, let's say, 7 years is kind of a number. And you need a mega market. You need to have something where it's going to be have a chance to, since it's such a high-risk investment, you need to have that higher return.
So if it's a small market And in order to get the size you need to be, you end up being 50 or 60% of the market. That's a much higher risk than if it's a huge market. And to get to that level, you end up at 2% of the market, and you've achieved your returns.
Yeah.
That's much greater risk for you, or a better risk for you.
An example I had, just looked at a deal. It was a great owner. He had it fit all the criteria I wanted, except it was, you know, selling hockey sticks. And I like that. And like hockey in Minnesota, but at the end of the day, it's not going to be a big enough market. Mm-hmm. It'd be a kind of a comfortable business owner type of business.
So that all factors into your risk assessment of the potential of the deal.
Absolutely.
The third part we're talking about is the management team. And the I imagine a lot of cases you've got the founder, the guy that's mm-hmm. thought up the idea, and maybe he doesn't even have a team yet. Do you get involved in that?
Yes, because one of the things we'll talk about later is I do connect the dots, which means connect the players that are needed if they're not there. But usually the founder, as we've already covered, is the critical piece of the management. It's who is within an arm's reach, because usually they can't be paid, but they'll put some time and skin in the game, and they're close at hand, and he's already, or she has already, marked out their management team. And so it's going to be in the plan and explained, and you'll know who they are.
So in the early stages of a startup, your management team is minimally paid in terms of actual dollars, and they get some stock or they get some options or something?
Yes. In fact, if the management team's paid real well, it is a flag. I'd rather, and other investors would rather, have that management team have a lot of skin in the game.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we've got the idea, the product, the market. You've got the good client partner. You've got a good size market, so that's a easier risk for you. We look at the management team and where they're going to go. And now you say, all right, we've got the product, we've got the team, we've got the idea. What are we going to do with it? Where's your business plan?
Exactly. Now, the business plan, what I'm looking for in a business plan is I don't need, 2 inches thick. Most investors really don't look at the business plan right away. They're looking at that executive summary, and they're looking for how quickly it can point out their differentiator, what is and what they have that is so special and different than market. That has to be pointed out real quick. Also in the business plan is, the flags, because you're trying to find a reason not to do the deal and pass it on. And I quickly look to break the plan. I'm always driven or attracted to the weakness, and I'm looking for the weakness in the plan. If somebody has 5-year projections and they're going to be $100 million, that's a flag, because that's just unrealistic. And if it's unrealistic plan, and there's a lot of unrealistic things and things not thought out, that means, you don't have somebody, they're just a flag. It's a good reason not to do it.
I've heard a lot of people, Bill, talk about business plans, and they're that 2-inch thick book document, and they give it to the bank and they never look at it. And a real business plan is an active, living, flexible document, is it not?
Yes, it is. A good CEO will be, and a management team will be looking at that plan and going with the flow, meaning they're going to be changing, because it is dynamic. You're absolutely right. Just from our example here, for my first pass in front of an investor, an angel investor, it's stagnant at that time, though. And it's just taking a quick look at what have they done, because they're showing for the first time in the world what they have. For example, if they don't cover competition and it isn't spelled out right, or again, that's unrealistic, that's another reason just to pass.
So we really have to analyze the marketplace and say, you've got a better mousetrap, you've got a better widget, but who's your competition? Why is your product better than their product? Why is a buyer going to buy your product rather than buying the competition's?
Exactly, and that is maybe jumping ahead here. What I do is what I call vet the deal, or investors check out. I look for the expert. I'm always, since I really probably don't know too much about the market, I will go find the expert, and later on that might be one of the dots that connect. Like, for example, it might be a CEO or somebody special in that area that might actually work with the company. I'm looking for the strategic partner. I'm always chasing revenue first versus money, because everybody's just chasing money. And I'm looking for what do the experts think about his plan and his idea and how it's going to sell.
So when you're analyzing a deal, you're going to go find someone with industry-specific expertise and bring them in to help you ask the questions and try to discern the answers.
Yeah, I call that cheating, because I want everything in my favor I can possibly get. So yes, I'm looking for I'm looking for the expert that really knows it.
Why not stack the deck? That makes your risk a lot better, doesn't it?
You have to have everything go your way, because I personally feel there's nothing harder than getting a company up off the ground successful.
Okay. So this is the due diligence that you're doing. But a lot of it is like the business plan you can see. How do you, I'm interested in how you determine the management team, aside from the resumes or their CVs, but the owner, the founder, the management team, since that's such an important part of what you're doing. How do you do the due diligence on them?
Good question. It is a small town. Mm-hmm. I invest in people in Minnesota. I have not had good experience outside, so you really want it local. Mm-hmm. And because of that, invariably, since I've been around so long and other investors have been so long, investors talk to each other. And as you know, bad news travels, or news travels fast, but bad news travels real fast.
Mm-hmm.
The information about the people is not the difficult piece. It actually comes. People, you know, they have a trail. We all have a trail.
So checking out the client partner is relatively easy for you to do.
Yes, it is, and it's it's just the automatic. You absolutely have to do that.
Okay. You know, it seems to, like, to answer Sam's questions, it seems like to me you must switch at some point from, okay, I'm taking a look at a deal, to, all right, I'm interested in this deal. Now I'm going to help you refine your business plan. Now I'm going to help you build a business plan that I can sell to myself and other investors, and so we can raise the capital. At what point do you make that switch?
Good question. After I go through those five things and find out that everything is looking pretty good, it's meeting a lot of the criteria, I see if that person wants to engage my services, which is quite a lot of work. I always say a lot of work for a little pay, but I am doing it for a win. People think, well, you're trying to find the right one to make a big score. I'm really focused on, I want a winner. So I'm looking for a winner. So to answer your question, I'll know it when I see it. I haven't seen one for well over a year, I haven't seen a deal that I really wanted to jump in on. I am looking at a number of examples right now. There's a lot of interesting things out there. And once I find that the owner, which we're buying into, it can raise the money, the valuation's there, we can talk about that, and all the other factors, if I'm excited, I'll write a check.
Is there a specific industry or type of product or service that you feel most comfortable with, or you enjoy working with most?
To answer that easiest, I'm always looking for something that's synergistic to a current deal I'm in. I don't do medical because I just don't know it well mm-hmm. enough, and I think the payback is, for what I've seen, just too long.
Yeah, that's good.
Here, let's back up for a minute, Bill. We talked about the five things you look for, but we didn't get to the capital and the financing. You're taking a look at the deal, the marketplace, the owner, the team, the business plan, and I'm assuming this fifth part is how much money do you need and what are you going to do with it, and how is that going to develop into a profitable business? Can you tell me about that fifth piece?
Yeah, if you're talking about valuation and how much the company is going to need, if it's too big, it's going to be too hard to take on. The angel investing, you have to know that's a segment from like a zero valuation to, let's say, $3 or $5 million. This is not a venture capital level. So you're not going to be looking at raising huge amount of money. But if a person has a business plan that needs, you know, a ton, he's going to have to incorporate some other people to raise big money. So you have to match the plan, what they're doing in their market, for how much they're raising. Yes. I would say the first stage of the round, there's several stages they'll have, is probably going to be in that $500,000 to maybe $2 million would be the raise.
So in your initial look at a business, your last question is, how much money are you trying to raise and what are you going to do with it? And then if you say, okay, you pretty much meet my five criteria, now I want to take the next step. Now you're going to get in there and you're going to help them with their business plan, and the amount of capital they might want to raise may change as well, won't it?
Yes. It's they might just not know because they don't have the experience. because I've been through so many, I think I know what to peg on the valuation and how to value it so it's fair for the investor, so you actually can attract them, and how much realistically to raise on the first, second, and third round. The early investor is really going to have to get a good deal, and in today's market, since it has changed, some people, well, they have said the pool of money has shrunk, the deals have to be better, there are less investors out there right now, so the thing, you have to take that all into account on how much you're going to raise and how much you're going to value it, because if somebody's not going to invest or in the deal, then it's just not going to happen.
So right now, with the current state of the economy, there's lots of startups looking for money and fewer investors out there looking at the deals.
Absolutely.
And so the valuations have probably come down a bit in this market.
The valuations have come down. I think things are more realistic. I think things have to be realistic, which is actually, in my point of view, it's actually a good time to be an angel investor.
Now, you brought up something that I was curious about. Are you seeing more deals as a result of this economy or less?
Actually, about the same to slightly more. And the reason more is because since people are out of work, they had an idea and they wanted to go start their own company. Oh. They had the time. So all of a sudden, you have a lot of business plans out there.
Interesting.
A lot of former execs that maybe got laid off and they had this idea and now they need to raise some capital and go out and do it.
Yes, they've always done it.
Bill, we've talked about how you looked through initially these deals, and you've done dozens of deals. Can you give me an example of what's the best deal? What's a really good deal that you got involved in the past? What were the aspects of it that made it really good?
Well, I like to say I have had two home runs so far. They are fun when it happens. I have a couple good I feel good about that are in process and percolating, and then of course there's a lot that aren't. But the ones that are gone. Usually, if by the way, you find out the losers within 2 or 3 years, I find out, and I find out the winners take a little longer. The first big one was about a 10-year deal, and of course, it was the right market, the right place. That helped. The management, well, I guess that was me and the team that I had brought in, and we bootstrapped it, but it was, again, a good market. So we got a little help to have luck. You have to, one of the things we never cover. By the way, you have all those things we mentioned. There's a little bit of luck is needed
just a little bit?
Yeah, to have a winner. Because I've seen some smart people and some great ideas, and it just didn't work. But the other one that is currently going on, I'm in, and it's working out very well. Again, it's a good market. But again, we took an existing workable model that was working, and we just duplicated, I got two good managers, and they went off and running with it. I was involved early on, brought in some sales, and which is probably what piece I'm most focused on, and I'm biased towards, is marketing and sales. I can't get everybody there, but if the marketing and sales is there, I think a company can take off, which this one did, and it's growing every year.
Imagine every once in a while you come across one and it's a good product, good service, good market. They're just undercapitalized to some extent. And if they had some extra capital, the opportunities are there. Those are the ones I'll bet you just lick your chops on and you want to jump at.
You're right. If it just takes just a little more cash to turn on the faucet, let's say to bring on a sales manager or just hire the next salesperson, which will bring in that much more revenue, yeah, those are the ones you're looking for.
Or put in some additional equipment, add some people to take advantage of some sales that are already there.
The model's already proven, and you already see it. Again, of course, the valuation's going to go up then. But, yeah, those are the ones that are a lot easier.
You're going to pay a little more, but you're going to get a good return anyway.
Yes, yeah.
What are there any traits that run through the ones that didn't have the luck and didn't work out? I mean, you're going to have your share of failures in doing this. This is a high risk business you're in.
Well, I could write the chapter on how not to do it. Again, we go back to that founder. I look for a founder to have his feet on the ground, and if they're really open minded, if they don't give you the head fake, and what I call the head fake is, they give you the yes to get the money. They totally agree with you, but months or weeks later, you find out they went a different way. Those deals, none of them have worked. The owner had to do it his own way. Thought, well, I wanted, we wanted to get a heavyweight marketing person. Totally agreed, but went and brought a friend in that was an engineer because he thought the engineer could easily be the marketing genius.
So you need good, open, honest communications and everybody on the same page in terms of what are we going to do with this new capital and what do we need to do, and then let's all get behind it and pull together.
I like how you said that. Yes, it really, you do really have to have an open, comfortable, honest, there is just no secrets. This is, we're trying to win-win here. We're trying to help each other. You really, you can't let the ego get in the way.
And Bill, you're actually taking an active management role in the company, it sounds like. You're more than a board member. You're right in there helping them with the business plan and helping them make some of the strategic choices.
I always thought I was a team member, and I would definitely play a team. I'd play a team role in all the spots where I'm needed, get away when I'm not needed, and definitely jump when there's an urgency, because I'm always looking to solve and have a solution if there's an urgent need. And so I'm kind of always there when they need me.
Okay, Bill. Now we're going to get to the good questions, and it comes down to valuation. If you're valuing a startup, and I've seen this hundreds of times in my career, but people are in there and they're struggling. They're all in, as you say. They maybe started in the garage, started in the basement. They put in all their money. They put in their friends' money. They put in everybody's money, and they believe in what they're doing. And now they decide, okay, I have to go outside and I have to raise some capital from some angel investors somewhere. How do you deal with the valuation issue?
Well, I like what you said. They have their money, and that was, by the way, one of the critical pieces I didn't mention, and maybe some friends. So they have some capital in there, and they have, let's say, a couple years worth of hard labor and work and some good ideas. Well, then all that is good, but then they hit the real world. All of a sudden, they're outdoors, and the cold air hit them. And water will seek its level, is the best way to say it. So the valuation will be what the market bears. The valuation will be all the combinations of what the first investor, which might be me, or the people that I bring, the investors I bring, what they think and what they can work out as something that makes sense based on where they're at today. Again, it's good what they did for 2 years, and it's good with the money they put in, or they wouldn't be here, but it's really going to be looking today going forward.
So for these startup entrepreneurs, it's time, as you say, to hit the cold air and take it out in public. What they're interested in is they can sit down and they know the time and the energy and the money that they put in it from the time they started the idea to the time they met you. They're thinking more along the lines of a value to create to get here to this point. But from your standpoint, from the other side of the table, you're looking at it as an investment, and you're trying to get a return on and a return of your investment, and it's got to be fair for both sides, doesn't it?
Definitely has to be fair. That's a very good point, because I find out if you get too good of a deal one way or the other, there's not enough oil in the engine, and it will sputter and it'll break later. It's amazing when somebody will do something and give up too much, but later on that will come back and actually can cause problems. So you have to be a win-win. It has to be a win-win at that moment.
Give an example of that, because that was interesting how, you know, if an owner or a founder, you're saying if they give up too much, how would that be? Would resentments build? I'm just thinking, you know, from a...
Well, then the investor has to watch that, because he will be so desperate for the money and he might just take anything. I call it eating the dirty hamburger. Well, he got filled that day, but he's going to be sick tomorrow. You have to make, the investor's got to make sure that that owner is okay with that, because he might strike a great deal and be a great negotiator. I like to think I'm not a good negotiator, which I wish I was better, but I'm not looking to get that last piece. I'm just looking for, as I said, the win. And if we get close enough, that's fine, because the end, if it's going to get 10x return was what you're looking for, and maybe it was 9x, well, who cares?
Everybody wins 12. In that one.
But if it's really going to be big, sometimes these things, you know, really, really have great returns. That little nit you gave up, I think me and most of the investors aren't too worried about that. Mm. It's getting down to, let's get it within a hand grenade. Let's get it close.
So if one side or the other side gets too greedy, Sam says it could lead to resentment, could lead to one side being unhappy, could lead to, and if it's the founder, that's the person you need to be happy and to move as fast and hard as they can.
Yes.
So that you both have some success going forward.
Some way to protect that I've done is, and our investors have many, there's many things, is one is a clawback. Well, okay, I'll agree with you. We'll put this valuation, but by the way, your milestones weren't hit. Well, then let's go back to what I thought it was originally then, if you can't make your milestones. That's just one of many, many ways an investor can protect themselves.
So if you have to go a little bit too far, you say, okay, we'll do this, but you have to reach these milestones. And if you don't, we're going to adjust it and adjust the ownership accordingly because it's more fair that way.
Yes.
But you give them the opportunity to, it's an earn out, really. You give them the opportunity to earn what they think the value is.
Yes. If they're talking big time and well, then show me and let's see. If not, then it was what I thought to begin with.
Okay. Well, back just for a minute into the minutia of valuation. Most of these startups have some kind of hopes or dreams that the value of their company is millions, when in reality it might only be one or less, might be $500,000. Where do you start when you look at that valuation? You have to take a good hard look at what they've done.
Again, there's a lot of factors. One's its margin. Let's talk about if it's 50% margin, the valuation in the market's big. If they have revenue already, let's say the revenue is
coming. You're talking about gross profit margin?
Gross profit margin. The gross profit margin is real exciting. Well, the valuations are higher. The market's really huge. You know, depends on how far he or she has brought their deal to this point. Again, if it's just off a napkin, it is you know, value where it should be, very, very little or nothing. But if they got 2 years and a lot of friends' money, as you mentioned, then the valuation goes up commensurate. It depends on all the factors of the market, how new it is.
Really comes down to a function of risk. If it's a huge market, it's a lower risk. Mm-hmm. If it's a small market, it's higher. All of those factors are going to affect your risk factor, and all of those things are going to enter into what piece of the company that you end up with at the first investment. One last question. Sometimes these investments come in phases. There might be the initial investment and then followed up. How often does that happen in these transactions?
Almost all the time, as I already alluded to. There's several rounds that you already know you're going to have, and I actually have the founder stage those things and calculate it, because nobody wants to be in a down round and squashed down later by the fourth round of investing. So the first one's really got little or no return, and that happens and has happened a lot. So to protect, again, the valuation has to start low and ratchet up later. And they have to have certain milestones, next level of round, with and how much. And so the investors that are going in today, or the angel investor going in, knows exactly what's going to happen on the second and third and fourth round. Otherwise, they're going to be very fearful and probably not invest.
Bill, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts or suggestions for startup businesses looking for angel investors?
Well, there is a lot of people out there with a lot of experience. I like to think I have a lot of experience. Is to a person that will invest in somebody that has been there and done it, pay some money out of their pocket or after the money is raised, if they can raise it, and give away some of the equity for getting somebody that has been through it and can really help find. What I like to say is find that first strategic customer. I'm all about finding revenue, so I guess maybe I'm selling myself, but that's how I would do it, is hire somebody to get them and help them, because they can't see it all.
Bill, thanks for being with us today for this segment of Angel Investing 101. We're about out of time. I am Tom Lyons with my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer Georgie Jorgensen. We'd like to thank Bill McQuiggan for being with us on this installment of todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. You can listen weekly to Today's Business Radio every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 7:20 on the talk station, AM 1500 KSTP. Tom and myself, Jay Coles, discuss business ownership topics to help business owners, entrepreneurs, and top-level executives build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for their eventual sale. That's every Tuesday and Thursday at 7:20 a.m. on the talk station, AM 1500 KSTP. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.